Hello and welcome to CICK News. CICK News is your local and regional news coverage provided by me, Pamela Hassan, and Dan Messick for Smithers Community Radio. This news program is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada, and our aim is to provide local coverage on stories that affect the lives of Northerners like you. Here's your CICK News for Thursday, March 6th. Rock Talks 2025 took place in Smithers last week, and it's a conference for geologists and exploration companies in Canada. One of the presentations given was called Geoscience Gitxagukla, an educational program to reconnect Gitxan youth with the land, but not in a metaphorical way, in a literal sense. As you'll hear from my interview with Professor P. Don Mills from UBC, who has been running Geoscience Gitxagukla, the minerals on Gitxagukla territory are omnipresent. You can find copper and gold on the surface of rocks without even having to dig too far. So naturally, a collaboration between mining engineering and Gitxagukla hereditary chiefs would be a natural next step. Gitxagukla youths interested in science and industry. Now first, here's a brief clip with my interview with Richard Thomas about Rock Talks from the Smithers Curling Arena.
So my name is Rich Truman. I'm the Senior Director of External Affairs with AME, the Association for Mineral Exploration. This conference is called Rock Talks, and so really the focus of this is geologists talking about what they've been finding through the bits of research that they're doing and what they think that means for the properties that they're working on and what this might mean for future mineral exploration. Most of the people here are geologists. So Rock Talks is organised by a group called Smithers Exploration Group, so set up back in the early 70s by a group of geologists who literally just wanted to talk about rocks. We've got a box of rocks in front of us as we're talking right here, and that's what the geologists want to do.
Professor P. Don Mills is a legal expert specializing in Gitxan property law and is working with Indigenous communities across Canada to navigate governance structures and resource oversight. Her research focuses on early exploration, mining operations, and revenue-sharing agreements, shaping new approaches to Indigenous economic development and legal frameworks. I spoke to Professor Mills after her presentation at Rock Talks in Smithers about Geoscience Gitxagukla, a program to engage and educate Gitxan youth about Gitxan land at an elemental level.
My name is P. Don Mills, and I'm a Canadian woman that had the privilege of listening to the Delgamuukw trial in the 80s and writing about it as a PhD in Native Law, History and Anthropology at the Faculty of Law at UBC. And in 2005, I was invited into the mining department because I do fish, trees, and rocks related to the Gitxan traditional law and management of their territories. And from there, I've been engaged in looking at how to integrate Indigenous perspectives into the curriculum. Geoscience Gitxagukla was a telephone call originated from the hereditary chief called Hanumak, who is a Gitsa, or fire reed, in the Gitxagukla watershed. He was concerned about the fact that the young people, as well as the individuals, were now being introduced to more exploration in the territories that are very dear to them, but as a community that has the copper culture and also other minerals for their healing. He was concerned that not only his descendants, living descendants, and also individuals who were making decisions about impact benefit agreements were missing a lot of information. And the ability to talk and listen to what was being said by the professionals, the geologists or engineers, environmentalists, that are related to exploration or slash future mining projects. Knowing somewhat that the delivery of secondary sciences are tough in rural Canada in general, and Hazelton, Gitxagukla, Gitnau, Gitwanga, even Terrace to the degree, are challenged for high school students. So at the same time, we are not an accredited institution to teach this, so we took it from a perspective of bringing an introductory perspective of the geology of the region, which is pretty unique through the history of its exploration and also the mines that have emerged from that exploration. So from that basis, we have designed a seminar series where the participant would be invited to access the program and also introducing the skills that were necessary for doing the work, which is in part the geology, understanding the geology in order to model it. The other activity is the actual learning how to do the skills of early geochemical engineering, which is basically soil sampling geology, looking at geology, mapping, identifying rocks, taking that classroom learning into the field, looking at what drilling is and how to assess drill core. What is drill core? Why is it happening? And what does it look like? And what do geologists do in order to get information from it?
What schools are you working with now, or where are your participants typically from?
They're from the Hazleton area, basically Gitomax, which is Hazleton, Gitniau, and Gitsagukala. These are traditional villages that are citing particular salmon stations and the Cranberry River, which is the Gitniau. And the Buckley River around the Hazleton is another marker, which is to the east is the Wissuotin territories and shared territories where Kispiox is up the river.
The talks are about relations with First Nations community when we're talking about when we're talking about mining. So yeah, do you feel like is that an after effect of this program, or was that part of that initial conversation as well?
It was part of the initial conversation. Have a really strong historic copper culture. They know what there's a lot of surface culture copper in the territory, a lot of gold nuggets hidden in the veins on along a creek chasm. It's there. Mm-hmm. That's why people are keeping looking for it. It's not mining. It's finding it on the ground. And silver is there too, copper, silver, gold. It's all there. It's something that they have used to identify who they are amongst themselves. And their territories are demarcated by rivers and mountains and valleys. And the management of that is exchanged in ceremony. So it's not just mining. It's getting people back onto the land as young people to see what is there, see how they put that back into their knowledge base as Gitxsan people, and how they relate to their neighbors. Mm-hmm. Because it's not a closed society. It's a society that wants their neighbors to adhere to their law. And copper is a symbol of that relationship. Innately, they've been alienated from that process, and we need to start bringing people in and letting them understand that it's accessible and not necessarily anybody's. It's a different language. It's a different way of looking at things. It's an enrichment of a basic understanding, but it's a way to put people back on the land.
The process for Dr. Mills to get confirmation that Geoscience Gitxsagukla could move ahead with youths took 2.5 years, and she will begin working with youths on Gitxsan territory in the late spring in partnership with the Center for Training and Excellence in Mining. Thank you to Professor P. Don Mills for speaking with me at Rock Talks this year in Smithers. Next, I sat down with Smithers Community Safety Officer Carl Chad about a program launching this year in Smithers to mitigate bike theft and celebrate good bike behavior. Look out for Carl this spring and summer in his high-vis vest and tablet in hand on a bicycle, ready to register your bike in Project 529.
Can you tell me a little bit about how this project made its way to Smithers? Because this obviously wasn't created here, but how did it make its way here?
Being that Smithers has an avid biking community, I was looking at resources in order to try and curb bike theft in town. And this was actually suggested to me by another biking enthusiast in town, and I looked into it, and it seemed like a good platform. And I see that Terrace RCMP are also using it, so I thought we should bring it to town.
Explain it to me and our listeners. What is it?
So basically, it's a registration system where you can register your bike for free, and it goes on a national database. and any law enforcement agency, bike shop can search the registry and find out who the owner of the bike is and return it to them if it's stolen. There's also a decal that can be purchased for, I believe it's going to be about $7. And it's just like the license plate decals we used to have. They're really hard to take off once they're put on. And that decal is actually recognized by most thieves, and they usually try to bypass those bikes knowing how good the registry system works. The RCMP in town will be also having the app on their smartphones, so they can also help you register your bike and or search the bike for you.
If I go to an RCMP officer, I can ask them to help me. If I have a new bike, they will actually help me register
if they're not busy, yeah, and they want to, they can. I don't know how much they'll get involved in doing it, but there's also a couple bike shops in town, repair shops, that will hopefully be joining in with us.
You said that that most thieves bypass those bikes. How would you know if most thieves bypass the bicycles with decals on them?
I talked to the project leaders of 529 and when I set it up, and they were telling me how well it was working. And then if you go on their website, you can see some stats.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have statistics on stolen and missing bikes in Smithers?
Not off the top of my head, no.
Okay.
But there will be, if you go on the website, so if you follow our smithers.ca, and you go onto the website and find the Project 529 section, there will be updates eventually going on there. It'll show you how many bikes are registered, how many bikes have been stolen, and how many bikes have been recovered.
Project 529 Garage claims that cities that actively use their registration system have seen up to a 40% decline in bike theft. And according to the bestbikelock.com, a Canadian survey website designed to share bike theft statistics, over 54% of bikes stolen in Canada are taken from the garden, shed, or garage of the owner, and just 24% of stolen bikes are actually taken from the street. 80% of the bikes stolen from the street were locked, while 68% of bike theft victims in Canada did not have a record of the bike's frame number.
On the bottom of your bike, typically either on the steering stem or the very bottom by the crankshaft, there is a serial number. So you punch that serial number in, color, make, model, as much information as you can give. And if you buy the shield, it's called the little decal, it'll have its own number, which can also be put in.
Okay.
I'll be going around this summer and stopping people. We're going to implement what's called a positive ticketing program, which means if you're wearing your helmet properly, or I see you use your hand signals properly, we'll have basically a little coupon for you to go to a local vendor and get free coffee or something. To be honest with you, most bike recoveries happen at our level, at the bylaw enforcement level. And usually even when the RCMP sees a bike in a warrant or anything, that it always comes back to us to distribute. Mm-hmm. So this is going to be a tool that we can use to get it back to its rightful owner. This is such an easy system to access to see who the bike belongs to. And if you sell the bike to somebody, it's super easy to transfer the name, and it just takes all the information and puts it into their name. So, and it doesn't cost anything to transfer the name as well.
What if someone steals the bike and then changes it under their name because they have the number?
They can't.
Why not?
Because when you register the bike, you have to do it, because you basically create a small account real quick under your name. So if they don't have the password, they can't change the registration.
If you want to register your bike today, you can go to project529.com and you can create an account and register there, or you can go to smithers.ca and find a link to Project 529 there, or leave it up to chance and maybe you'll get a free coffee out of it from Community Safety Officer Carl Chad. At the charging station in downtown Smithers, I met up with a husband and wife duo who have been touring to raise awareness for electric vehicles since 2021. Yes, you heard that right. Currently, they're on one of their longest trips, which started in May of 2023, and I caught up with them yesterday afternoon as they gave their vehicle an extra charge to speak about their awareness campaign and events that are happening in Smithers this week and weekend.
I'm Nicole Ivedy, and we're part of EV Road Trip.
This is Richard Ivedy, husband and wife team here. And yeah, we've been on the road for going on 2+ years, actually, with a Rivian R1T, which is currently plugged into the BC Hydro fast charger right next to us here.
Are you currently on the trip that you started in May of 2023?
Right.
Yeah, pretty much. We are still on the road. Back up north for the second time, which is pretty exciting. It's really awesome coming up here, and the fact that all these chargers are available now, it makes it so easy.
Mm-hmm. So we pretty much hit the road January 2021, been on the road since, and then we left May 2023 from Vancouver, went straight north to Yukon, came back down, went straight east to Labrador, That took basically the rest of the year, and then January 2024, we turned around, came all the way back, all the way to Vancouver Island, all the way up to Fairbanks, Alaska, as Nicole mentioned, Haida Gwaii, and we're also partnered with the Emotive BC team, and their mandate is to accelerate the adoption of electric vehicles, specifically this year around northern BC communities. And so we're actually here last time in October and November, and it was surprising to us how negative a reception our campaign had, just with so much misinformation.
What are people not understanding, or what are you hearing when people hear that you're on an EV tour?
A large part of it, in our opinion, is, you can ask Nicole momentarily if she has any other thoughts about it, but it's a lot of purposely driven misinformation from all sorts of different outlets. Some are foreign governments, some are different industry organizations that feel threatened by electric vehicles, having Canadians rely on foreign fuels is in the best interests of a lot of organizations, for Canadians to power their own transportation on regionally created electricity. And people see headlines, they see news reports that are generated these kinds of concepts in mind. And just in today's day and age, with the way social media is, it's hard to distinguish what information is real versus what information is misinformation. Mm-hmm. And so a large part of what we've been trying to promote here is just our personal experience, which is basically unarguable. Like, we have gone from Vancouver to Labrador to Fairbanks with 86,000 kilometers in an electric truck. We spent the whole winter through very cold climates. We were in Edmonton at minus 38 degrees. One of the comments that stuck out with me was that's all well and good for you guys to be doing this trip from your nice warm area in Vancouver, but once you get into the northern regions, your car is going to not work properly and you're going to die. I'm like, I'm from Edmonton. We know cold weather. So we decided that, okay, if people want to see us do something in the winter, mm-hmm. then we'll come back and do something in the winter. Mm-hmm. So what better way than to power a ridiculous concert on a mountain powered by an electric vehicle?
And so some of these events are to actually coordinate installations of charging stations. Is that part of the campaign that you're doing right now as well?
Partially.
So we have been chatting with people along the way and working on a few different projects that we found that have come up to help out some different organizations with that. The main purpose was the advocacy of just connecting with the EV groups that are all across the country. Mm-hmm. And that actually led us to be connected with EV Society of Canada. It's really amazing to see all of the passion that these smaller groups have. And yeah, what's coming up is really exciting. Obviously, we're going to have a few more challenges with the political climate. I had no idea how politicized this really was until we got into it, but it'll be neat to see. I think I'm still feeling very positive because every EV owner we've ever talked to has said, I love my EV, I never want to do anything else, this is like so much better.
Yeah. You touched on it a little bit, but when you're speaking and when you're doing these awareness campaigns, are you speaking with municipal governments and people who are the change makers, or are these grassroots organizations? Who are you connecting with?
So we've connected with pretty much all the electric vehicle associations across the country. We've talked with some federal representatives, one was right here, different corporate organizations, EV associations, universities, airports, pretty much everyone you can think of, just to provide not only information about EV charging. Yes, it's just, where do you find accurate information these days? Yeah. It's very rarely Facebook, that's very rarely Instagram, all those kinds of media outlets, but a face-to-face conversation with somebody who's actually experience those things. Yeah. It's changing a lot of minds and turning a lot of heads. So that's good. A large part of what we're trying to do.
I want to talk about the event on Sunday. Is it going to be your vehicle that's charging it?
Yeah, so we're actually partnering with Coast Mountain GM in Smithers here, and they're going to be providing likely a Hummer EV, possibly a Chevy Silverado EV, both of which are brand new state-of-the-art electric vehicles with way more power output capacity than what we can do with ours. Like, we can run our kettle, our hot plates, any appliances, charge up our devices, all that stuff very easily. But to power a full concert, which is what we're talking about here, you need a little more output. So these vehicles are outputting more 6 kilowatts of power, which is more than enough to power something like this. So this is pretty exciting how far the technology has come, especially when you're thinking of a vehicle to grid kind of technology where you can use your vehicle to power not just a concert, but your home. If you've got a remote property, you could as a battery bank, essentially, and you have a week of power very easily.
Yeah, we're having an event tonight, Thursday, March 6th at 6 o'clock at Coast Mountain GM, where we'll connect with local individuals, local EV drivers, and a bunch of the sales team at Coast Mountain to provide information around our trip and just information that we have on the EV industry in general.
Yeah, we'll be doing a Q&A session completely open to the public. We'll have refreshments available as well. GM will be doing test drives of EVs, and I promise this to be quite a lot of fun and very informative for everyone.
We're also meeting up with a local group, the Smithers Climate Action Team, on Saturday to just go over any questions they may have tomorrow. We're also meeting up with a local group, the Smithers Climate Action Team, on Saturday to just go over any questions they may have. And then, yeah, on Sunday, concert powered by an EV. That's starting at 3:30 p.m. on Sunday.
Scouts Honor.
Okay, thank you both very much. To learn more about the value of electric vehicles, or if you just want to gain more awareness about electric vehicles, you can follow Richard and Nicole Ivedy online at evoroadtrip.ca. And the concert that they were promoting is going to be at Hudson Bay Mountain on Sunday at 3:30 p.m.
Thanks again for tuning in to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at skeenastrong.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks again to our producer, Pam Hassan, and all of our roving reporters. I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.